From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Roger Skibinus, ABC News. Listen.
As a Marine, I was taught to fight and fight hard for as long as it takes to prevail.
Lift off, Senator. The era of planetary science begins as Atlantis clears the tower.
We are looking to coordinate and cooperate together to push forward the peace processes in the Middle East.
I didn't have time to think. I just knew we weren't stopping.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's world news.
Don't get high, don't get tight, and you'll get it right graduation night.
Rhonda Price, Terrence Price, Donald Provost.
Sometimes
Alexander
Quinn. It's what you don't hear that says more.
Dean Redmond.
This year, we won't
Susan
be hearing
Rice.
Alan's name at graduation.
Marianne
or John's
Richard.
Or Claire's.
Linda
no,
Roberts.
They didn't fail algebra. You
Donald
see, Alan
Roberts.
Brought more than his date to the prom.
Paula Robertson.
It didn't take too many beers to
Andrew
get everyone
Rogers.
Feeling pretty good.
Edward
and the next
Rogers.
Thing you know, everyone piled into Alan's
Carol
dad's
Roundtree.
Car to drive to the lake.
Suzanne Sands.
John's date was lucky. She'll
Ryan
be graduating
Siever.
On crutches. The rest Mrs. of them,
Schaefer.
Well... It doesn't take a lot of brains
Ronald
to know
Simpson.
That drinking and driving isn't smart.
Stuart Smith.
Too bad they weren't thinking on prom
William
night.
William Smith.
Celebrate smart.
Thursday, May 4th, the day of reckoning for Oliver North. For 8 weeks, testimony had been heard about his involvement in what came to be known as the Iran-Contra affair. How, while a Marine colonel assigned to the White House as a national security aide, he had funneled money from the sale of weapons to Iran to the Contras fighting the Nicaraguan government. The jury considered 12 criminal counts against him for 12 days, then made its judgment. John Kecker was the chief prosecutor.
Colonel North has been convicted of 3 very serious felony charges. Obstruction of Congress, altering and destroying official documents, and accepting an illegal gratuity. The jury has spoken after a long and difficult trial, and the principle that no man is above the law has been vindicated.
North also saw vindication in the verdict.
As a Marine, I was taught to fight and fight hard for as long as it takes to prevail. We will continue this battle, and with the support and prayers of the American people, we will be fully vindicated.
Some of North's supporters were outside the court when the verdict was issued, and they left no doubt how they felt about him as they chanted his name and called him an American hero. North's lawyer, Brendan Sullivan, indicated that the case was far from over.
There will be post-trial motions filed. There will be an appeal filed. There are many extraordinary and unprecedented legal issues to address. We expect to prevail on the remaining 3 counts.
In acquitting North of 9 of the charges against him, the jury members said they saw the defendant as a scapegoat, blamed unfairly for following the orders of his superiors. And as ABC's Beverly Lumpkin told us,
jury forewoman Denise Anderson indicated some concern and a bit of hurt at comments she had heard people make about the jury members. Since the verdict, she's heard people say all the jurors were poor blacks without any education. She said, maybe so, but we had God in us. She said they took their job seriously. We weren't on a pleasure cruise. We were taking care of business.
Most of the jurors who were interviewed said former President Reagan should be held accountable for most of North's activities. And as Ms. Anderson added,
I feel for Oliver North. I feel for him. He's not a bad man.
While the trial provided some fresh insights into the roles of high-level Reagan administration officials, it failed to establish the degrees of involvement of such men as Ronald Reagan and George Bush. President Bush had been linked to a 1985 White House plan to give Honduras increased aid in exchange for that country's support of the Contras. And on the day of the North verdict, Mr. Bush sought to lay that issue to rest.
The word of the President of the United States, George Bush, is there was no quid pro quo. The records of the meeting demonstrate that there was no quid pro quo.
The meeting mentioned by Mr. Bush was with the Honduran president of the time, Roberto Suazo. Oliver North will be sentenced on June 23rd. Still facing prosecution are former National Security Advisor John Poindexter and two of North's associates who helped him in the Iran-Contra affair. The North verdict wasn't the only cliffhanger of the week or of last Thursday. Already delayed a week by a glitch in its fuel system, the space shuttle Atlantis played dodgeball with pesky clouds for about an hour, and with only 5 minutes left in its launch window, we finally heard that familiar call from Mission Control.
2-1-0, and liftoff. Planetary science begins as Atlantis clears the tower.
No more postponements. This second time around is a go. Atlantis climbs off the launch pad with its $500 million Magellan cargo in tow. You can hear a cheer and applause from the spectators gathered here. Both solid rocket boosters and the three main engines firing full bore. 7 million pounds of thrust, pushing the shuttle and its cargo straight up.
About 6 hours after describing the liftoff, ABC's Vic Ratner listened in as Mission Control announced that the main goal of the flight had been achieved.
Both of the solid rocket motor burns have successfully taken place. Magellan is on the proper path toward Venus, falling toward the sun as we speak.
Magellan is the space probe that'll take some close-up pictures of Venus about 15 months from now in an effort to learn more about Earth's sister planet and the heavy clouds that cover it. The astronauts aboard Atlantis will be back home on Monday. The state of Alaska has formally rejected Exxon's plan to clean up the oil leaked by its tanker last March, the state saying that the company had failed to consider the increased pollution of shorelines well beyond Prince William Sound, where the spill occurred. This as the oil slick extended to the Katmai National Park and Preserve, where Dan Hampson of the National Park Service said,
"It's a lot more serious than we thought. We were trying to anticipate what kind of an impact we would get down here for weeks. We've been trying to work with the park staff and developing a spill contingency should the oil get here, but I don't think any of us were expecting this volume of oil."
Meantime, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Admiral Paul Yeo, says the Exxon plan is workable, but it must be expanded from the waters to the shoreline.
"Almost all of the skimming that can be done has been done. We're seeing the end of the time that skimming makes sense. Whether we'll skim for another week or another week and a half or 2 weeks, I'm not sure."
Vice President Dan Quayle visited the area on his way to Washington from a Far East trip and made this observation.
"You see that there's a strong commitment to do what is necessary, and that's what we're going to do."
The captain of the tanker at the time of the spill, Joseph Hazelwood, was in Alaska this past week to plead not guilty to criminal charges stemming from the accident. Meantime, half a dozen consumer and environmental groups called for a national boycott of all products made by Exxon. As Rolf Nader put it,
"By voting with their steering wheel and their dollars, consumers in this country can deprive Exxon of hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars this year."
But dealers such as Anthony Del Campo of Bala Cynwyd, Pennsylvania, says a boycott's not the way to go.
"What it's going to do to Exxon is nothing. What the problem's going to be, it's going to kill the independent dealer."
The consumer and environmental groups want Exxon to meet five demands, among them setting up a trust fund for environmental protection. The leader of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Yasser Arafat, sought to broaden his political horizons by visiting France. And while he was warmly welcomed by President Francois Mitterrand, French Jews showed their displeasure with widespread demonstrations. Arafat raised some eyebrows when he said the PLO charter, which called for the destruction of Israel, is now null and void, and adding,
"We are looking to coordinate and cooperate together to push forward the peace processes in the Middle East."
While official Israeli reaction was one of skepticism, some people at the government level said they found Arafat's declaration interesting. The extremist group, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, issued what amounted to a death threat against Arafat, branding him as a traitor to the Palestinian cause. Iran is making death threats again. This time, the Speaker of the Parliament called on Palestinians to kill Americans and other Westerners in retaliation for the Palestinians killed by the Israelis in the occupied territories. The State Department's Margaret Tutwiler reacted quickly and forcefully.
"The outrageous call to murder and terrorism by Iran Speaker of the Parliament, Rafsanjani, marks another step backward for Iran, away from the community of civilized nations. so long as the support of terrorism remains an instrument of Iranian policy, the Iranian government will guarantee its isolation and the continuing hardships of the Iranian people.
Just a few months ago, Rafsanjani was seen as a moderate. Analysts say his tougher stand appears linked to his campaign for the presidency of Iran, a post which could put him in line to succeed Ayatollah Khomeini. A significant job discrimination issue was decided during the week as the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that an employer has the legal burden of proving that his refusal to hire or promote someone is based on legitimate reasons and not sex, race, or age discrimination. Harvard Law Professor Arthur Miller says the ruling makes sense because...
What they're basically saying is, look, employer, you know what you did. You have the records. You are in control of the executive. So you come forward and you're in a better position to prove that you didn't do it than this poor plaintiff is in proving that you were engaging in sexual discrimination.
The case involved the failure of the Price Waterhouse accounting firm to promote a woman to a partnership. In San Francisco, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ordered the Army to reinstate a soldier denied reenlistment for being gay. Former Sergeant Perry Watkins says the Army knew he was gay for years, and...
They shouldn't be punishing me for doing what the officers told me, which was, go ahead and soldier. And even the Army admits that I did that in an exemplary manner.
The court sidestepped the more basic issue of the military's historic bias against gays, but the legal director of the gay rights group, the Lambda Education and Defense Fund, is optimistic.
We're only hoping that this case will represent the first step, or one of the first steps, towards recognizing that gay people in the military have a lot to offer and should not be summarily discharged.
It's unclear, as of now, if Perry Watkins will try to rejoin the Army. There were several other legal actions of interest during the week. One involved a mother who liked to dance. Darlene Scott of Palm Beach, Florida, loves the music video Love Overboard. But little did she know that when she rushed out of the shower to dance to it, her neighbors were peeking through her window. They called the cops, telling them Miss Scott was nude and was dancing in front of her kids. Arrested and jailed for lewd behavior, Miss Scott is now suing for false arrest, harassment, and false imprisonment. Her lawyer is Trent Steele.
It took my client a number of months to get the system to understand that it was, A, none of their business what she was doing, and B, that there was, you know, a case of overzealousness here.
In Denver, the city council has abolished a 36-year-old zoning ordinance that made it illegal for unmarried couples to live together in some of the city's better neighborhoods. Councilwoman Debbie Ortega was among those voting to repeal the so-called Living in Sin law.
I don't think this means that people are going to turn around and change their living habits. You know, I think it takes away the fear of people having to feel like they're being spied on.
Los Angeles police have used a new California law intended to hold parents responsible for the criminal activities of their children and have arrested the mother of a teenage suspect in a rape case on the grounds that she condoned his membership in a street gang. In Florida, a convict is being freed, and Joan Carr of the Rape Crisis Center in Bartow says...
We are outraged. I don't think that's too strong a word. The man committed a crime, was convicted for that crime, and based on something irrelevant to the crime and the conviction, is going to be let go.
That's because the man was convicted under a law designed to protect physically helpless people. His victim, a 13-year-old girl whose legs are paralyzed by muscular dystrophy. Physically helpless? No, ruled the Florida Supreme Court, because she screamed for help and tried to push her assailant away with her arms. Thus, the man was tried under the wrong law. His lawyer, Ron Toward, says he cannot be tried again.
Basically, he'd be looking at a double jeopardy situation if he's prosecuted for the same criminal episode.
The lawyer says, unpopular as the decision might be, the law's the law. Last fall, voters in California approved Proposition 103. It drastically cut insurance rates and imposed strict regulation of the insurance industry. The issue's been in the court since then, and now the California Supreme Court has upheld most of the law. Harvey Rosenfield is its author.
This is a tremendous victory for the consumers of California, a tremendous triumph for grassroots democracy in this country.
Attorney Joseph Cochette explains the immediate effect to consumers.
No longer will you simply get a premium notice as to how much insurance costs without you,
the consumer having the absolute right to look at the books and see that the profit is reasonable. That is the key.
The Association of California Insurance Agencies had argued that Prop 103 would have a devastating effect on the industry. But its president, Tom Keneally, says they're ready to cooperate to see that the law works.
We no longer wish to be perceived as part of the problem. We want to be perceived as part of the solution.
Auto, property, and casualty insurance rates will be cut 20% under what they were in November of 1987, except for those companies which can show they'd go bankrupt if those rates applied to them. Big investigation of the commodities exchanges in New York.
Subpoenas were issued naming more than 50 brokers at four of the five commodities exchanges. These markets trade futures contracts for gold, silver, sugar, orange juice, and many other commodities.
ABC's Richard Davies, who says it's the second major probe of its kind this year. In January, dozens of subpoenas were served as part of an inquiry into dealings at Chicago's two big commodity exchanges. The Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court showed up at a congressional hearing this past Wednesday.
My appearance before you today apparently sets a precedent in that no sitting Chief Justice in recent history has testified before a congressional committee.
William Rehnquist was there to urge Congress to give the nation's federal judges an immediate 30% increase in pay. He says today's salaries are not attracting top talent. Congress earlier killed a 50% pay raise for senior government officials, federal judges, and members of Congress in the wake of public opposition. Another sign that the economy's cooling down, April's unemployment rate jumped to 5.3%.
Part of the reason is that manufacturing job gains have really slowed down. There's actually a slight decline in April. And that's because a lot of industries have figured out ways to increase their productivity. They've simply figured out ways to produce more with the same labor force. Also, I think we're starting to see a slowdown in service employment.
That's Edward Yardeni of Prudential Beach, who says the jump in the jobless rate seems to have calmed fears of higher inflation. But now, some analysts are worried that a recession could be coming if the economy cools too much. An update on the battleship Iowa and its damaged 16-inch gun turret.
We can confidently predict that the turret is repairable, as the price of that repair will be somewhere between $15 and $20 million.
The Pentagon's Dan Howard, who says there's still no cause given for the explosion that killed 47 sailors 3 weeks ago. Meanwhile, the Iowa's future home port on Staten Island in New York was officially dedicated this past week. Christine Jorgensen died last Wednesday. In 1952, when her name was George, she created headlines by going public with the fact that she had gone to Denmark for a revolutionary sex change operation. She became the immediate butt of comedians' jokes, but always maintained it was something she had to do.
No, I've never had any regrets at all, no.
Christine Jorgensen took hormones for the rest of her life to maintain her appearance. She died of cancer at the age of 62. The country's leading public health official, Dr. C. Everett Koop, is resigning in July. And an official with the American Medical Association, Dr. James Todd, says he'll be missed.
Over the time of his tenure, he has shown unusual courage, tenacity, and willingness to do what is right rather than as that which is expedient.
Republican Congressman Edward Madigan of Illinois agrees.
I think that Dr. Koop was very effective in dealing with the problems of his era, notably the AIDS crisis, raising the public awareness of the drug problem, making the public more conscious of the hazards of smoking. All of those things he did very well.
Dr. Koop held the Surgeon General's job for almost 8 years, and Democratic Congressman Ron Wyden of Oregon says he'll be a hard person to replace.
I'm very hopeful that Dr. Koop's successor will be one who walks into Dr. Koop's office and says, how do we continue the fine work that my predecessor began?
Dr. Koop hopes to write books and work in TV on health issues. As for any future Dr. Koops among the nation's students, Education Secretary Laurel Cavasso says things have to change a great deal.
I regret that I have to report that this year our students' performance has been stagnant. The good news is that the schools are not worse. The bad news is that we're not making progress. We're standing still.
Cavazos was releasing his department's latest report card.
When we compare our students against their peers in other countries, we see our students performing minimally, lacking the advanced skills they need to be successful. And this deplorable fact further underscores my belief that money alone is not the answer to our education deficit.
A point reinforced by Undersecretary Ted Sanders.
There has been an increase in the per pupil expenditure without the commensurate increase in performance or curbing of the dropout rate.
Which, Secretary Cavazzo says, is discouraging to say the least.
Today, as an average school day, some 3,600 youngsters across the nation will drop out of school. This is truly a national tragedy.
While Cavazos plays down the money angle, the head of the National Education Association, Mary Futrell, says fewer dollars and poor performance are linked.
We believe very strongly that those results reflect now the ripple effect of the budget cuts we experienced over the last 8 to 9 years.
But Ms. Futrell agrees that money is not the only answer. For one thing,
we would strongly encourage parents to get to know the teachers, to make sure the homework is done, to monitor the grades, to visit the schools on a regular basis, to make sure the children are in school, and to make sure that they have a strong base of support for acquiring a high education.
As far as teacher salaries go, Alaska has the highest rate of pay, more than $40,000 a year. South Dakota's teachers are paid the least, $19,700. The story of a hero aboard a train when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Young people from all walks of life have volunteered to take part in a frightening experiment. For a short time each day, they are allowing their brains to be altered. Altered to the degree that paranoia has been induced. Altered to cause loss of motor functions. Altered to have adverse effects on reproductive organs. Altered to produce heart malfunction and destruction of brain cells to the point of memory loss. And acceleration of the aging process. The most frightening part of this experiment is that it is not an experiment. It's what slowly happens to you when you keep smoking pot. No one has to alter your brain. You've already volunteered to do it to yourself. Brought to you by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
It was a parent's nightmare. Three-year-old Todd Pritchard and his 18-month-old brother Scott wandered from their home in Ramsey, New Jersey last Monday while their mom and dad were unloading groceries from the family car. They didn't have far to go before they reached the unfenced New Jersey Transit Railroad tracks. Not far up the line, a 19-car train traveling at 20 miles an hour and picking up speed as it went down a grade. The engineer saw the boys and leaned on his horn while he hit the emergency brakes. But conductor Anthony Falzo watched the gap between the boys and the train close fast, and he jumped from the train.
I didn't have time to think. I just knew we weren't stopping. You know it from experience, and you know it's going to happen. And I saw the two children. I just didn't want these children to be harmed.
The locomotive clipped the 18-month-old boy, but his injuries were not serious. And his three-year-old brother escaped unhurt, as did the heroic conductor. The boy's father said he could thank Anthony Falzo until he's 100. It still wouldn't be enough. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Longin. Engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Tom Kennedy. I'm Roger Skibanis, ABC News, New York.